pitch. Swinging a drive towards the gap in right center. It's pretty deep. It's back near the wall. It's gone. It's gone. Francisco Lindor. He may have just outdone himself. He has hit a grand slam into the Phillies' bullpen in right center field. The Mets are leading by a score of 4-1. They were famished for the big hit all night, and Francisco Lindor just provided a feast. Mets 4, Phillies 1 here in the sixth inning.
Diaz on the first base side of the rubber. Rests the glove on his left thigh. Looks into Alvarez. Diaz still staring in. Come set. The 1-2 pitch. Swung on and missed strike three. Put it in the books. And to the New York Mets, California, here we come. They have defeated the Philadelphia Phillies 4-1. They take the National League Division Series in four games for the first time ever in their 16th year at Citi Field. The Mets are celebrating a series win. They are out first at the mound, then the rest of them out at second base. Why are they out at second base? Because they're pouncing on Francisco Lindor, whose grand slam gave the Mets the four runs that turned this game around in the sixth inning. And the New York Mets are going to the National League Championship Series. They will face either the San Diego Padres or the Los Angeles Dodgers beginning on Sunday night.
I mean, it's amazing, right? I mean, the fans were going crazy. Fans were here tonight. They were all over it. It was a team effort, and it was just great.
That's what I was going to ask. Yeah. When you bought this team, were nights like tonight, stadium packed, everybody on every single pitch, was that what you...
for this for years. I wanted this place packed. I want to slay the negative, you know, Met fan perceptions. And we're on our way to doing that. So let's keep it going.
Certainly are. Steve, all right. Alex, congratulations.
All right, thank you.
All right, guys, hey! And the story continues.
Hey, yeah.
When we clinch in Atlanta, hold on, when we clinch in Atlanta, we thank the best owners in the world, Steve and Alex.
Yeah!
We thank our front office, David, baseball operations. We thank you guys in here, the trainers, everyone. Now, let's celebrate our families. Let's celebrate our wife, our parents, your kids, that behind the scenes are right there with us.
Yeah.
And lastly, our fan base.
Yeah.
Yeah. Francisco, Francisco Lindor calls it Mets Nation.
Yeah.
Guess what? We believe you need to continue to believe. Let's go!
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Thursday, October the 10th, 2024. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com, no G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on Instagram, Talking Mets No G, and don't forget the newsletter, substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And of course, I want to thank the good folks on the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Welcome to the champagne-soaked studios of the Talking Mets podcast. Here we are, the morning after the Mets clinched the National League Division Series, 4-1 over the Phillies. I don't know about you. It was a fun night for me. A night where we had an incredible two-hour Twitter spaces, me and then Anthony Rivera of Subway to Shea. Of course, a little celebrating, maybe a couple of gin cocktails too much. A lot of Mets love being spread around, but well worth it. And here we are the morning after, really just it feels like hours after everybody was celebrating this emotional and incredible Mets win. And the journey continues. And I've been struggling as I've been thinking about coming on the air this morning because it was easy to do the Twitter spaces. Basically, that's a reaction type of content. And truth be told, and I said this as I came on and Anthony had introduced me on as his guest co-host, that I was going to put my objective, the bridge to both sides, hat away and celebrate and share and talk to the listeners, you know, and show them that passion that you all know is underneath what I try to do here. But I don't want to be a fan. I don't want to be one of those shows that wears a Mets hat and is like an extension of Mr. Med and a mascot. That's not who I am. It's not what I want to be. And I was struggling coming on today because obviously we had that experience, the 2 hours, fans calling in, sharing their stories, talking about all sorts of things, where we grew up, moments in Mets history, you know, people that we want to share this with. And so I was struggling coming on and thinking about how do you top the euphoria of last night? What else can you say about this Mets team after this Philly series, other than look ahead, and they don't even know who they're going to be playing because the Dodgers and the Padres are going to be going to a winner-take-all Game 5 out in L.A. But I'll start, and I'll try, and I know I'll hear from all of you about it. I'll start with, I guess, the on-the-field stuff. And there are certain times where certain players know that's their moment. That you either seize it or you don't. But that's that moment. And there was a few of those last night. But the two that obviously stand out, the pillars of the win, and guys that we've been talking about over and over and over for weeks here, is Francisco Lindor and Edwin Diaz. The worst case scenario was playing out yesterday in the early innings. I had said, whether it be on this show or on the spaces the night before, when the Mets had won Game 3, that it's not that the Mets couldn't win a Game 5 in Philly. It's why put yourself through that? Because that was going to be a gnarly situation. It was going to be Zach Wheeler. It was going to be the shadows. It was going to be, because the Mets were ahead and because of how things had played out, it was going to be giving the Phillies another life. A team that already was like an NBA team at home with how they played at Citizens Bank Park, a place that has been applauded over the last couple of postseasons as being maybe the hardest home field advantage to crack in the league. And this is a league where the Yankees are in the postseason. It's you know, maybe up there with those old Yankee Stadium days. And the Mets played exactly into a team that is trying too hard. They were very aggressive, more so than normal. They left the bases loaded a couple of times. They seem not tight, but anxious. And Ranger Suarez and the Phillies were able to dip and dive and dance and work their way through between Suarez, Hoffman, who wound up giving up the big runs. They were able to get out of a couple of situations and keep the Mets at bay. And I was thinking to myself exactly what I said. The Phillies knew they were in front of a raucous crowd. Nick Castellanos talked about surviving and eking out a win here at Citi Field. And if you were Rob Thomson and the Phillies, after you get out of a couple of bases loaded situations, easily could have been down a 5 spot off the bat with a couple of big hits. Not big home runs, just a couple of big hits. You got to feel good about yourself going into the late innings with the lead. Because you still have Kerkering, you still have Estevez, you have Strom, Hoffman, who was an elite setup guy. You had to feel good. You survived the buzzsaw. You took the Mets fan out of the game. You were neutralizing Citi Field. Because if you were behind, and every time an out was recorded closer and closer to the ninth, the place was going to become hotter and hotter and a big party. And let's also face it, it's not the kind of ballpark like Citizens Bank where you could say, let's just get a couple of guys on and, you know, blast one over the wall. It's not an easy place to hit a home run. But then there's that moment, and you knew, and I was watching it, and you knew as the bases get loaded, Alvarez doesn't come through, another not so great at bat, maybe the moment getting a little bit big there for Alvarez, that Lindor is up, you knew that was the moment. You knew that if that didn't happen, if Lindor didn't come through, that this was going to be a rough final few innings. I mean, and how many more times could you give, not in the Phillies' life, but inspire them to say, hey, this is happening for us. And if you look, Estevez is coming in, he's pumping 100, and Lindor was way behind one of those early fastballs, but calmly took a couple of pitches, gets ahead in the count, and then Estevez grooves one, same velocity that he grooved the earlier fastball that Lindor missed, and boy, he didn't miss this one. And the roof just basically almost caves in. And at that point, the man that we've been talking about all year, really the guy that has been this polarizing, constant figure of maybe a symbol of the Mets not being good enough, maybe a guy that has been given press because of contracts and things like that, and now a guy that as the year goes on, has really cemented himself more and more into the pantheon of Mets history, into people that will remember, players that will remember, and moments now yesterday that will remember with that home run, right up there with other big Mets home runs, right up there with Lenny Dykstra's walk-off and Benny Agbayani's home run. Moments like that. Edgardo Alfonso's home run in Arizona that we see replayed over and over. Todd Pratt, I mean, over and over and over again, you could think of big home runs. He's right there. And he seizes the moment. And then the game turned into the direction that it needed to turn to keep the Mets away from Citizens Bank and finish this thing off and really have a party at Citi Field. But there was work to be done. And again, I'll say we were the first to kind of lay out the plan we would do. And almost immediately after the spaces, Anthony Rivera and I were rewarded by hearing how Mendoza, played it out the same. Peterson was going to be that bridge after Quintana. And Severino was going to back up Senga on Friday. And sure enough, that's exactly how it went down. Now, Quintana and Jose Quintana's performance against the Phillies will be overlooked, but it shouldn't be, because out of all the things that happened between Lindor and now what we're going to talk about with Peterson, and then obviously the coup de grace with Diaz, Quintana quietly kept the Phillies at bay and didn't let the Phillies get to a point where the Mets, while they were trying to figure this game out, were 2, 3, 4 runs ahead and really put the pressure. If not for Vientos' misplay, that guy doesn't give up any runs at all. He didn't give up an earned run, but he doesn't give up any runs. He was fantastic, and maybe he can't go 3 times around the order, but you give me the 5 elite innings that he gave, you take that every time in the playoffs against the kind of competition that is in front of you. So Reed Garrett and then David Peterson, what can I say? Another guy that has had a complicated relationship with the Mets and the Mets fans, a guy that's often overlooked, a guy that had a big part in the early season of 2022, but really faltered down the stretch. Persona non grata up until his return earlier this year, I guess right around Memorial Day, somewhere around there, maybe a little bit after. And here he goes. He goes out and he gives 2 outstanding bridge innings and sets it up for the coup de grace for, as we always talk about, the guy that the Mets will live by and die by, probably for the remainder of his contract, and that's Edwin Diaz. And believe me, when you talk about moments and how Lindor sees the moment, and how he will be remembered forever in Mets history for what he did, Diaz's moment's a little bit different. Because, yeah, Diaz will be remembered for getting the final out in this series, but he's in a tougher spot because the game is about Lindor. The game is about Lindor's home run. He's just locking up for the day. He's doing what everybody will say is what you should do when you're a $20 million a year closer with a 3-run lead at home with the entire crowd and your theme song blasting behind you. And we've seen a couple of Diaz movies play out over the course of his career. But the one that plays out bad in the end is the one that when he comes in and he can't throw strikes, and I thought he was squeezed on a couple, not all of them, a couple. And I think his lack of being able to hit the corners didn't help him with the umpire on a couple other pitches. And when he walks the first couple of hitters, and then you have the bottom of the order, and now you know this thing's getting to Schwarber and then maybe Turner and, ooh, God forbid, Harper. You're like, all right, the way this has played out all year is that he's going to hang one. Someone's going to hit a home run to either give the lead or tie the ball game. And then you're going to have a deflated building and a whole new ball game, maybe similar to what the Phillies went through on Sunday night, but in a far, far more gut punch fashion because it was a way that the series was going to end. And I'm sure there were some of you watching in the audience at Citi Field that were saying, I think this is where this is going. And the thing about Diaz is once he gets going, once he throws that strike, once he blew away Clemens, which was another irony that's like, here's this guy, the son of a Mets nemesis that has such a connection to Mets history on multiple levels. I mean, he can't be the one that's going to burn his father's nemesis all these years later. He can't be, right? He's not going to get a hold of a fastball. And once he blew away Clemens, you had to feel better because that was a different Diaz after that. That was a Diaz that was throwing strikes. He gets Marsh out. And then there's Schwarber. And that was the sequence. He got the slider in after he threw a strike. He got the slider in enough where Schwarber couldn't do anything with it with his power. And the fastest pitch, I believe, I don't know if that's what StatCast is going to tell you, but it was 101 on the Fox broadcast. And it looked, just from the vantage point of watching the game, it looked like the hardest pitch. He just blows away Schwarber on the outside corner. He executes and finishes it off and is one of the few pitchers in the league that can pull off that kind of velocity with that kind of pinpoint location and blow away a fastball-loving power hitter like Schwarber. And then the party begins. So Diaz seizes the moment, and he admitted he's been a little bit burnt because of the use. And I think Mendoza and the Mets, as we've talked about, are learning a little bit about Diaz and what he can and can't do. But that was the moment he seized. Again, how would he have been able to recover? And again, we keep saying that over and over and over again since Atlanta, since he had that horrible eighth inning. How would he be able to recover if he couldn't finish it out? I think there was validation yesterday that the best scenario for the Mets, and we won't get too deep into that this morning. We'll do more as we preview the next series in the coming days. That Diaz is best served coming in at the beginning of a clean ninth inning, just like the regular season. It allows him the certainty to channel whatever he needs in terms of performance juju or mental focus and acuity. It allows him to channel that versus the uncertainty of, well, I'm going to come in with the highest leverage inning. So at that point, it's a big party. But have you ever seen a team run out to shortstop? Now, maybe that's planned because Diaz told them, look, if we win and I'm on the mound, I have all this PTSD because of the knee injury a year ago in the World Baseball Classic. Believe me, the Mets don't need losing Diaz to an injury on the mound because of a celebration. Maybe that was part of it. But I have to believe that all season, and especially the last 10 days, you know, 2 weeks, whatever, the shortstop who was having this MVP season had saved them at other times before. Going as far back recently, I mean, it seems like there's a moment a week with him to the home run in Toronto, to the big home run in Atlanta. Think about how it was a situation when he was out and Acuña had that flash of glory that he did the best version, best copy, best replica of Lindor that week when he was out. But you thought in the back of your head, man, that's a bad situation, a bad back, and the Mets could lose a lot. They could lose McNeil. They could have some of the injuries in the bullpen. But no, they can't lose Lindor, and because you knew you'd need him. and a team that just ran to him and hugged him over at the shortstop position. I mean, I haven't ever seen that. And the best part about this and about his home run, Lindor's home run, is that he just old school ran around the bases like, okay, it's a grand slam in July against the Nationals. And his answer after the game was like, hey, this is one of a couple of more celebrations I want to do. And I think that's really one of the bigger message that or messages I wanted to get across is this isn't house money anymore. This isn't, wow, it's an innocent climb. And it is an innocent, I shouldn't say that. It is an innocent climb. And yes, there are going to be things that come away from the season, regardless of whether they win it all or get or win another game. But there's no way now when the first pitch, whatever time that is on Sunday of the NLCS, Mets versus a Cali team, there's no way that you could say, I don't care about the rest of the postseason. It's all gravy. Because that's quite simply not true. The Mets put their chips to the center of the table last night. They all of them kept saying, more work to be done. They are talking now openly, actively, about wanting to win a championship. That probably was always in their mind something that they wanted to do, but I think now they're seeing it morph in front of them that they can do it. It's one thing to say, hey, the message has been blanket, let's have some fun, everybody thinks we stink. Or as J.D. Martinez has said, suck. It's a family show, but I don't think that's the worst word in the world. Sorry, guys. It's another thing to now put your chips to the center of the table and say, hey, I'm not satisfied. And they aren't. And I've said this before, but I want to say it louder. And if you're not listening, or if those that are Mets fans around you are not listening, or those that hate the Mets or members of, you know, fan bases of the other team, and geez, if you happen to be a national media member and you come across this clip, you especially need to hear this. The Mets over 105 games, a big chunk, two-thirds of the season, were 100 win team. 650 or so winning percentage. 65 and 30, I think it was. Yeah, 65 and 30, something along those lines. 65 and 40, something like that. They were a team that was on a 100 win pace. That is a serious team. That's not a little engine that could. That's not a, wow, a great story. You wanna get caught up in the playoff pumpkin and grimace and OMG. Those are all fun things to make this a little bit more colorful. Maybe if there's a highlight video at the end of the year or a highlight montage, they're going to be cool subplots, especially for the casual fan and the younger fan. But in the end, this is a team that when they consciously got together, when Jorge Lopez was thrown off the island, when the media was circling and the national media was going, LOL Mets, look, 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 the guy's throwing a glove in the stand. That's our next thing. That's our next meme. That's our next summer of fun. They got together and said no. And they have been an elite team. They are as serious as the Dodgers. They are as serious as the Padres. And I don't think any of those American League teams are any more serious than the Mets. Quite honestly, it's amazing how much harder the road and how much deeper the playoff road is for the Mets versus some of those American League teams. Now, I don't want to underestimate Cleveland and Detroit. And, you know, certainly the Yankees, who I don't think are as good as everybody makes them out to be all year, are chopped liver. And neither is Kansas City. But the gauntlet that the Mets have gone through, and now they have a few days, and they really need those days. I know momentum is something that teams have used as a competitive advantage in this new tournament postseason that Rob Manfred put together a couple of years ago. But if there's a team that ever needed some time off to recalibrate and put themselves in the best possible position to beat either a very difficult Padres or Dodgers team, it's this team. So that's the next thing you got to wrap your head around. Celebrate. Enjoy these moments that Lindor and Diaz gave you. Enjoy the fact that David Peterson is growing up before our eyes and maybe becoming a bigger part of the immediate future than we could ever think about. And you heard Carlos Mendoza last night do his speech to his team. And boy, what an inspiring guy. What a manager that knows how to say the right thing and give credit to all the peripheral people that deserve credit, the trainers, the wives, the player development people. And to add Mets Nation, maybe that's the new thing, Mets Nation, and credit the fans. I mean, who has done that, but in a real genuine, heartfelt way? I haven't ever heard a manager do it. Sure, owner or manager, coach will cite the fans as the 10th man or whatever you want to call them. But I didn't expect that. And I was saying on the Spaces yesterday with Anthony how I know I'm 0.00000001% of this thing. You know, you got content outlets that are going to be more front and center, people that travel with the team, and guys like Howie Rose who have been covering the team for a billion years. But when you feel like you're part of this thing, it's an incredible situation. And to be recognized, you as fans and me as a fan in this scenario we're talking about here, I mean, that makes this really one big tent. That makes this much more powerful. And believe me, the fans aren't going to forget that. And I think, and we've been talking about this for a couple of weeks, we're seeing the evolution of the next generation of Mets baseball birth before our eyes. If it's birth with a championship, and this is the Mets moment like the Yankees had for that generation of Yankees fans in 96, man, that would be incredible. But it's almost like this group has finally accepted the challenge. And I've been thinking about how I've talked about the yoke, which Steve Cohen mentioned. I mean, I put those clips on the way in. He mentioned to SNY after the game about how he wants to remove this negative Mets fan mantra that has existed, that the media uses as a weapon to fill airtime or clickbait or whatever, radio airspace. You're seeing this whole thing morph before our eyes. And the more I think about it, it's not so much 86 that's waited on them. It is there. But as much as 86, which started it, and the failures and the disappointments and the near misses that have happened since then, I think we're finally seeing this fan base and organization recover from 2006 Game 7. Really. And I never had that as a thing, ever. It was part of a bigger weight on the organization's back. But the minute that Yadier Molina's ball went over the wall against Aaron Heilman 18 years ago, the minute that Carlos Beltran struck out to that Hall of Fame curveball from Adam Wainwright, who ironically was in the booth the last few days, things got bad. People didn't feel good about themselves as Mets fans. And yeah, you had that. And I think I'm definitely going to be coining that and probably overusing it, that Harold and Kumar go to White Castle baseball season of 2015 where the Mets wake up on August 1st and go on this magic ride. But that was never leveraged. Maybe that would have been the team and the point. If things turned out differently in the World Series, maybe that would have changed things. But I still feel like because of the ownership situation, because of the lack of a real organization plan on multiple fronts, I don't know if they could have, even with a championship, really been in the position to capitalize, and I believe will, on what is almost like a new complete chapter. If you're looking at a history of Mets book and you have all these eras, I think the new era of Mets baseball, even the Cohen ownership era, is really starting now before our eyes. Because he was trying to figure this thing out and piece it together while still giving the fans a team that is worth rooting for. And he deserves a lot of credit on that. But last night was about the moment. And it was about a team now that seized the moment, a fan base that did their part to seize the moment. And now the chips are at the center of the table. Now there's no turning back. This is the deep end of the pool. It will be euphoric if the Mets finish this thing off. It'll be better than any other. Every celebration will be better and better and better and better. But the fall is going to be hard now. Because if they don't win, it's going to hurt. It's not the end of the world. It'll set them up for what's next. Either way, they'll be set up for what's next. But how what's next and what that looks like will be very, very different if they don't have a trophy in a couple of weeks. But that's sports, and that's why we all listen, right? That's why we do this. The joke I've always had is sometimes I feel that some portions of the fan base live for losing because it allows them to dream, allows them to pretend, it allows them to focus on promises of the future without really having to worry about the fall. It's a safety net. I could dream about these prospects being the next whatever. If they lose, the expectations are low. It doesn't hurt. But that's really not what rooting for a team is about. You root because you want these moments. And there's a generation of fans, maybe you're listening, I don't know, that weren't around or old enough for, you know, appreciate 2015 enough. Think about it. Maybe you were 6 or 7 years old in 2015. And now you're a late teenager, 18, 19, 20, whatever, 21, 22. You have no ability to appreciate 2000, 99. And I mean, 86, that's kind of how like 69 was to a young Mike Silva in the late 80s. That might as well be the Revolutionary War for you guys. I mean, what? That's a history book. You're now getting your moment. You're getting where 20 years from now, when you're in your 40s like I am, you're going to say, like I say, I remember where I was when Todd Pratt hit the home run or Fonzie hit the grand slam in Arizona or that wild week when they had to beat the Pirates 3 straight and go to Cincinnati and then go to Arizona. This is now your moment, and congratulations. It's fun. And if you're sharing that with somebody, even better, because that's what sports is all about. When I had the pleasure of speaking to the New York Times, I believe it's the style section, and I want to make sure I get the reporter's name correct, Callie Holterman, really nice writer, journalist over at the Times style section. When she called me about this craziness with the pumpkin and Grimace and OMG, I said ultimately it was about everybody just using these props to make this big tent of Mets fandom that much more fun. Because that's really what it's all about. Yeah, we talk about the bullpen. We talk about roster building. We get into the weeds here at the Talking Mets podcast with our back of the paper bag math, our back of the paper bag pseudo fantasy baseball, Stratomatic, armchair GM nonsense. But at the end, we're doing this because we're trying to have some fun. Mets become a great social outlet for so many people. I've met so many people because of the Mets doing what I do here. I know people, and you could see them on X, whether it's they've met through the 7 line or doing something that this is their connection. This is their post high school, post college, adulthood relationships and outlets. And sometimes it's not healthy. It reminds me of how unhealthy sometimes Citi Field has been, rooting for the Mets has been. But I think that's changing. You're seeing the growth before our eyes. You're seeing an organization and a team seize the moment. A fan base seize the moment. Everybody rowing in the same direction. And again, winning a championship is hard. The Mets have been through so much since Milwaukee 2 weeks ago when they had to win a game on that weekend, last weekend of the season. And the doubleheader and everything. They've been through so much. You as a fan base are probably exhausted. I'm exhausted, and I'm really enjoying stepping away from baseball after I put this microphone down. I'll be back in 48 hours. I'll do something to preview. We'll do some fun stuff. But I need a break. And I love you, and I know some of you pay for premium content. I'm not trying to cheat you, but I need a break. And it's not even halfway. It's halfway over, actually. You've got so much baseball left. You've got so much drama ahead. You have so much hard work still to do against the best teams, quote unquote. against maybe a very difficult Padres team or a Dodgers team that has been the gold standard that the Mets are chasing. I mean, there's so many stories. And then could you imagine if there's another Subway Series 24 years later? Could you imagine? I mean, the Mets just exercised the demon from 2007. They've owed the Phillies for almost 20 years. They owe those guys for a lot more. But cart before the horse. So, I don't know if I did a good job this morning. I don't know if I rambled. I don't know if I made sense. I don't know if this is the kind of content you've come to appreciate when you tune into the Talking Mets podcast. But this is the best way I could describe what was really a fun night. An emotional moment. Hey, I had fun, man. I had a couple of gin cocktails. I was feeling good on the spaces. For those who tuned in, you probably saw that. Because I wanted to feel this special moment and remember it with anybody that I came in contact with. And I don't do end of the season goodbyes in the middle of a championship run. But as I always say, I always appreciate the fact that any of you spend 30 seconds listening to me. The commitment, and I see the numbers, how they grow, and they are, this is a nice little universe that has been built. And it hasn't just been built, and it's taken many forms, for those of you who've been following me from way, way back. But really, the evolution of this version has really been hatched mid-season 2019. And it's grown, and we've become closer and closer together, and we've had our ups, our downs. And sometimes, like I said, I tweeted last night, my relationship with the fans is complicated because sometimes I say things that you don't want to hear that hurt. But I do it because I want to be honest, and I want to tell you how things could be better. What you saw yesterday was that stadium, that post-game celebration, the connection that's being built between ownership, team, fan base, everything. I knew that could happen here. That's a beautiful ballpark. And yeah, I know the surrounding part is nowhere near where it needs to be, and there are way more fun places to hang out after a ball game than Citi Field. But that's a cool place, and it's only going to get better. And I knew it could be that. And I knew that if you just threw the clickbait in the garbage and you put the past behind and forgot about Molina and Terry Pendleton and Piazza's ball getting knocked down in the ninth inning, if you could put away the collapse and the frustration of Madoff. I mean, how, for the last 15 years, who would have thought a disgraced, now deceased Ponzi scheme fraudster, bankster, would be synonymous with the New York Mets? I mean, there's so much stuff that this fan base, I know, didn't bring on themselves, didn't deserve, but the contribution of taking the summer of love, really, of 2006, the summer of Mets love, and turning it into this bane of your existence, well, that's on the fans. That's on the people that watch the team. The 06 Mets were beat. Just like this Mets team's beating teams, the 06 Mets were beat by a similar tough team with a tough manager in St. Louis. But ultimately, my point is, I just appreciate every time I take this mic, every time I get a call, every time I get an email, every time someone subscribes, whether they pay for premium content or not, I appreciate it because I know it's such a commitment for you to do that. I'm not talking dollars and cents, I'm talking time. Dollars and cents you could always make more of quickly. Time you really don't get back. And the fact that you sliver out whatever time to think about, talk about, agonize about, celebrate about the New York Mets with me, I appreciate that. And there'll be more fun to come. So what's next? Well, rest. Give me at least a day. I said 48 hours. You know I'll be, by this time tomorrow, I'll start getting back into the juices. Once I figure out who, well, not I figure out, once the game five against the Dodgers and the Padres has been completed, you know that's when the juices will start flowing. And by midday Saturday, I'll be ready. So the plan is I'm going to do a preview show. I don't know what that looks like. So to be determined, stay tuned. I'll be on X. I'll be checking in. Obviously seeing reaction videos and looking at some more highlights and celebrations of last night's victory. But ultimately, I'll be interacting on social media with you all. So, at Talking Mets No G, Mike Silvat, TalkingMetsPodcast.com. Whatever the scenario is, I will absolutely, absolutely get back to you and interact with you. So I want to thank everybody for this edition of the Talking Mets Podcast Reaction Edition to the NLDS Game 4. Put it in the books, guys. NLDS is over. On to the NLCS. On to California. California, here come the Mets. Here come the Talking Mets Podcast. Here comes Mets Nation. You could check me out, of course, all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. As I said, you can get me on X at Talking Mets No G and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silvat, talkingmetspodcast.com. No G, Mike Silvat, talkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, Talking Mets No G. And if you want to give it a try, don't forget the newsletter, substack.com/@talkingmetsnog. And thank you, the Fansided Podcasting Network, for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. If you want to celebrate, you still have some time to celebrate. The sun just came up, at least here, on Eastern Long Island. Enjoy it. Get some rest. We'll be back with another Talking Mets podcast very soon. Till then, take care, everybody.